Hello and welcome to episode 69 of the British Bird Gang Breakdown.
Nice.
There's some playoffs going on at the moment, but we have much bigger news to talk about in this episode. So as always, I'm Tom, and I'm joined by Callum.
Hello.
To break down some huge Arizona Cardinals developments, and also to announce some British Bird Gang Awards winners for the 2018 season.
Huge, massive news. The British Bird Gang Awards are finished, so that's obviously our news, right?
Well, usually it'd take precedence, but, you know, we've got a new head coach, so...
Yeah, well, we've got some exciting head coach news and some general coaching staff news, because I think last time we recorded, we covered Steve Wilks being fired, right?
We did, yes. What a dark time that was.
A dark, dark time. But in the meantime, we've been given hope again as an organisation. I've forgotten what it felt like. The Cardinals in with probably one of the most exciting head coach moves of the year.
Yeah, some people will say that, but then others will be like, he's white, you know, he's young, everyone doesn't like that.
Yeah, exactly.
What can you do about that?
Well, you know, that's the thing, and there's a lot of people as well who are arguing, sort of saying like, you know, he's a college coach with no NFL experience and we're bringing him in. But at the end of the day, I think he must have been able to impress Michael Bidwill, otherwise he wouldn't be here.
Precisely. Where else is he going to get his experience if no one gives him a job like this?
Well, I think people are expecting him to... You know, are saying that to get that NFL experience, you've got to come in as like an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, or whatever. But can you imagine giving up the level of control you have as a college head coach to come in to doing just DC or OC or something?
I mean, it'd be a shock to the system, I'm sure, given like all the recruiting and all that, and then going to nothing.
Yeah, definitely. But I think after the season that we've had, trying just about anything is fine. For a guy who's, you know, an offensive mind, then I think bringing him in is going to be a really good move.
So the guy we're talking about is obviously Cliff Kingsbury, who the Cardinals hired to be their new head coach following the sacking of Steve Wilks.
I should point out to listeners, by the way, that in our little script, Tom's headed this as Cardinals hire Cliff Kingsbury as head coach, with Cardinals and head and coach both styled with a K. There's a lot of Ks going on generally at the moment.
Not three in a row, though, because, you know, that's a bit wrong.
No, definitely. But we can definitely, push it to get in four or five.
He was fired by Texas Tech with a losing record, which is something people are using as a stick to beat him with, as to why he shouldn't have an NFL head coach job.
I've heard that in every single argument, you know, like, oh, he's come out of Texas Tech with an overall losing record. But, you know, you got to look as well at the talent that he brought through in that time.
Yeah, I mean, he had a few good quarterbacks to work with, but when he's surrounded, like, in Texas with teams like Oklahoma, Texas themselves, Houston as well, I suppose.
It's a pretty tough sort of division to be in, isn't it, really?
Tough to recruit as well, I assume.
Yeah, I imagine so, actually, yeah.
But, you know, he doesn't have to bother with all that recruitment stuff in the NFL now.
No, just drafting. But we'll get onto the draft later on, I imagine.
Yeah, following his firing by Texas Tech, he ended up taking up an OC position with USC. But they allowed him eventually to interview with both the New York Jets and Arizona Cardinals.
So this is something which really confused me, because I would have thought that, you know, once he had accepted the job, he would have been, you know, locked into it. Do you think they allowed him to interview just to kind of be kind, or is it something else entirely?
Like standing in his way, wouldn't he, if they turned down the request?
Oh yeah, absolutely, but surely they'd be within their rights to stand in his way if he'd signed a contract with them. You know, they'd be able to sort of say, no, actually, you told us you'd come to work for us and we stopped looking at other candidates.
Yeah, I mean, there is that part of it. But, you know, the Cardinals gave him $150,000.
That's true. I guess, you know, $150,000 heals a lot of stung wounds.
Exactly. And I'm sure it'll go on to profit good things in the college. Not playing the players, obviously. Can't be doing that.
But, yeah, I think it's... It's obviously very exciting, and it's obviously like quite an out-of-the-box, or is that the right phrase? Out-of-the-box?
It sounds about right.
I don't want to say like out-of-the-box as in ready to go. It's more of like an out-of-the-box as in, you know, not a conventional hire.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Hopefully the listeners will as well.
I'm sure they will. But, you know, it's definitely... as I said, exciting at the very least. It's given people a lot to talk about recently.
We never had any sort of excitement like this when it was Steve Wilks announced. Everyone was just like, Oh, okay. It's just another defensive coach.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's coming in with like an offense which was like one of the best in like the last several years of college football, or ranked like really highly as well.
Yeah, huge offense, huge amount of production there. And, you know, we've been hearing the words air raid offense thrown around just again and again and again. It makes it exciting, you know, especially with him being a guy who's been, you know, famous for, and I hate this word, I hate the way you describe it, a guy who's been famous for grooming these young quarterbacks and having guys who've all come into the league and made an impact in the past couple of years, including, you know, possibly two of the best young QBs playing at the moment.
Yeah, I'm with you on the grooming part. You know, it's creepy as hell.
It's not the best word, is it?
Obviously means a different thing to them in America, not to what we know as grooming.
Yeah, I feel like I feel very dirty saying it, but it's you know, he's brought through a lot of good young talented quarterbacks into the league. Obviously, you've got listed here as the likes of sort of Case Keenum, Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield, and Patrick Mahomes. And I think that would be, you know, if he had a lot of input in these guys' careers, then obviously it would be very, very exciting if he can bring some of that to Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I mean, Mahomes was obviously the one he had the most success with, I'd say.
I'd say Baker Mayfield is definitely in with a shout there as well, though, because he's in, you know, in playing with the Browns. The Chiefs have a lot more weaponry at their disposal, and they had a more, you know, ready-to-go offense. So obviously he's, you know, in scoring a lot of points. But Baker Mayfield managed to come in and really turn the fortunes of the Browns around, which is quite the task.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point, but at the college level, Baker did most of his work at Oklahoma, not Texas Tech.
Okay.
That's what I was saying, yeah.
But, I mean, I'll take the guy who coached Patrick Mahomes any day. For me, the thing that shows, though, is really that Michael Bidwell sees Josh Rosen as the future of the franchise.
Well, I think he has to be, doesn't he, after they've spent the 10th pick on him last year?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's, you know, it's excellent that's happening, but it's a nice vote of confidence after, you know, some shaky games, you know, games that could be charitably described as shaky this year.
Although, did you see the news? Well, not the news, but like a clip came out of Cliff Kingsbury talking about a potential quarterback in the 2019 NFL draft.
I missed that entirely.
Well, there's Kyler Murray who's coming into the draft. He was at Oklahoma as well. But he's also worked with, it was like last October, I think it was, he said something along the lines of if he had the number one pick, of course he'd take Kyler Murray number one. And, you know, now he's come to Arizona, who happened to have the number one pick.
Absolutely. Maybe he came to Arizona over the Jets because we have the number one pick, who knows? I think it would be an interesting use of, you know, because the number one pick, we've got our choice of like literally everyone. And I think it would be an interesting use of it to bring in another quarterback, even just to shore up the ranks a little bit. But I also think that could definitely be perceived as a slight against Josh Rosen. So I'm guessing he would have to step very carefully with that one. And he would also have to convince Steve Keim of it as well.
Yeah, of course, because if they had to trade away Josh Rosen, he'd eat up a $10 million cap penalty, which I suppose isn't too bad, really, when you've got like $70 to $80 million coming into the season.
Yeah.
But I don't think you'd want to get rid of Josh Rosen this too early, would you?
No, definitely not. The guy deserves a chance, right? The guy deserves a shot. I mean, he did show a lot of promise as well. Like, as shaky starts aside, he was, you know, all those times when he was coming out from behind the league's worst offensive line and still being able to make some throws. Yeah, I'd take that.
I'd also be pissed because I bought a Josh Rosen jersey. I was expecting at least 5 years out of it.
I decided to go away from the mistake I made last time, and I just got a Callum jersey, you know, one with my own name on it.
Of course, one of the slights to Cliff Kingsbury is the fact he's got no prior NFL coaching experience. But he has been on the rosters of the New England Patriots, the New Orleans Saints, the Denver Broncos, the New York Jets, and Buffalo Bills. But he has a grand total of just 17 passing yards in his career.
It's always interesting when you've got a sort of former player turned coach. And it's especially interesting with Kingsbury because he's still, you know, he's so young. And he also, you know, seemingly keeps himself like almost in game shape, you know. But I guess, like, at least with these experiences on these teams, at least he knows what goes on inside the organization and knows how different cultures can be between different teams. I guess that's valuable knowledge to have.
Yeah, he also played in NFL Europe for the Cologne Centurions, where he was a bit more successful. actually got to play there.
The NFL Europe was a funny one, though. It was. I mean, didn't Kurt Warner actually play in NFL Europe as well for a while?
He did, yeah, for Amsterdam.
There you go. Yeah, it's a funny one. There's some like surprisingly big names sometimes that played for some of these teams, but you know, I guess like it shows that he's got a passion for the game for sure.
And one stat here that stands out, since Kingsbury became an offensive coordinator in 2011, his offenses have averaged 550 yards and nearly 42 points per game.
Did you say that's an average of games across 8 years?
Yeah.
That's absolutely absurd. I know college traditionally scores higher than the NFL as well, but man, even if you translated that down, you know, 20-30%, that's a solid average to be coming out at.
Exactly, and considering what we went through last season.
I mean, there was like large combinations of games you could make up where 42 points wouldn't, you know, or overall total offense wouldn't have made 550 yards and 42 points.
For like over two games at least.
I think some of the games you could probably string together. I mean, we had a zero game, we had an under 10 game. You know, like I think you could string together probably at least three, maybe four games where we got, you know, less than that total.
That's in the past though, we can move on to the future.
Yeah, and speaking of the future, we're starting to get a glimpse at the coaching cabinet, as it were, of Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury's coaching cabinet, all with kids. So obviously the big gaping hole at the moment is the offensive coordinator.
Yes, and as of recording, nobody has been hired yet for the offensive coordinator position. The latest link was former Minnesota offensive coordinator John DeFilippo, who was apparently a favourite of many to be the head coach last year before we hired Wilkes. And just before we started to record this, it was broken that former Detroit offensive coordinator Jim Bob Cooter was interviewing today for the position.
I was just about to come out and say that I just spotted the Jim Bob Cooter news as well. Because it does pay to have, you know, tabs open for things like this at this time of year, because it can all be very fast.
What a name, though.
Jim Bob Cooter, I know. It's a quite spectacularly American name, isn't it?
Jim Bob and Cliff. But obviously, we can't really talk about offensive coordinator because we know Cliff Kingsbury will be calling the plays.
Yeah, he's already stated that, and I think Michael Bidwell was also saying that that was part of the deal. So, but the offensive coordinator is obviously still a really important job to have. And I think he said he's looking for somebody with much more NFL experience so that they can sit together and come up with a playbook that's going to work, but also be very exciting, which makes me very happy considering the Mike McCoy playbook that we were stuck with for much of this season.
Did you see who he's interviewing with?
I didn't, no.
He's actually interviewing with the Jacksonville Jaguars today.
Really?
Like, who would actually want to interview him after last season?
I mean, my guess is that you would just interview him just in case, but like, I would have thought that he would never work in this town again, as it were.
That came after the Jim Bob Cooter news that did. I was going to retweet that, see what everyone else thought about it, but I thought,
just wait and see, yeah.
I wouldn't give him a job, but you know, it's not my call.
I mean, to be fair, we gave him a job after he'd had some terrible seasons at the Broncos as well.
And he lasted like, what, half a season here?
I think he lasted like half a season or a third of a season in Denver as well.
Maybe the last half a season in Jacksonville as well.
Maybe that's what it is. It's just they want somebody to come in and write a terrible playbook and then go away.
Help them to get that number one pick next year.
To a 2020 draft pick, yeah, absolutely.
There's some more news with the defensive coordinator, and they've gone again with someone with experience in the NFL. Recently fired Denver Broncos head coach Vance Joseph is coming in.
Yep, and this is a hiring that I'm pretty happy with, because Steve Keim was specifically saying that they were looking to run a 3-4 defense this year rather than the 4-3 that we ran last year, which is, I personally think, more exciting to watch and, well, anything that makes our defense more effective, really. But this guy as well, he's capable. He's run both in his career. And I think that could be quite good in a sort of transition period.
He's actually shown he's versatile in his coaching, where he can use both schemes. Unlike Steve Wilkes, where he said, oh yeah, I can do 3-4 as well. But then he does nothing of the sort.
He did absolutely no 3-4 throughout the entire time.
Square pegs around holes sort of thing.
Absolutely. And especially once we got injuries rolling in and all sorts of stuff like that, just jumping through hoops to stay at 4-3. But I think, you know, Vance Joseph from... I obviously hadn't heard much about him before, because I don't tend to keep up with who other teams' offensive and defensive coordinators are unless they're some sort of superstar. But everything I'd read about him seems to be, you know, quite exciting.
Yeah, and he's had a couple of years head coach experience with the Broncos. He's not had much success, obviously, but, you know, that's not all down to him.
Yeah.
And did you also see as well that Steve Wilks has now got a new job?
I did not see Steve Wilks has a new job. Is he back DCing for somebody?
He's, yeah, he's with the Cleveland Browns.
For his sins.
They're putting together a decent coaching staff there.
Oh, yeah, I saw. I mean, I saw they'd made some interesting hires, question mark, from Minnesota. You know, if he's away to the Browns, why not?
Yeah, and they also hired Freddie Kitchens there as their head coach.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the fair play to them. And maybe Steve Wilks will do better, you know, back in it at defensive coordinator when there's a lot less to worry about.
And one where he's actually got 4-3 personnel to work with.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the right team to run his defensive scheme rather than just, you know, grabbing guys where they can. And putting people on the outside that don't need to be on the outside and all that sort of thing.
Putting Patrick Peterson in the zone, yes.
Don't get me started. Speaking of misused players, one of our biggest misused players last year was David Johnson, who's obviously going to be a key to this offense for hopefully years to come. So the running back coach was a big one for me to keep an eye on.
Yeah, when they hired James Saxon, who was released by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Got to keep that chain line going.
The Steelers are just a coaching farm for the Cardinals. It definitely seems, I mean, I think, I can't even remember where I read it recently, but there was a piece that was sort of saying how Michael Bidwell really sees Pittsburgh as like a blueprint team for the Cardinals to work off of.
I mean, they are to an extent, but I don't think you want your star wide receiver throwing a strop every week, do you?
No, but he is now favorite to come to Arizona, so... You know, that could be interesting.
Antonio Brown.
Yeah, they were sort of saying, you know, like his contract's all up in there and all this stuff. And he's not, they're saying it's more likely he'll end up at the Cardinals than return to the Steelers, which is interesting.
That is interesting. I wouldn't complain, to be fair. He's a decent player.
I wouldn't be complaining, you know, as long as he was playing well and not, as you said, throwing a strop that he's not getting the ball. Although, wide receivers, we've got a new wide receiver coach as well.
David Rye, who was with Green Bay for the last 5 seasons. He worked with Kingsbury at Texas Tech back in 2013. So there's obviously a link there.
Yeah, like a little bit of provenance. And you know, Green Bay have had a solid wide receiving core, but they've also had quite a lot of challenges in there as well. So it's good to know that we've got somebody who's able to come in and deal with, you know, big stars getting injuries and able to have a rotating wide receiver core, because I think that's probably what we're going to get under Cliff Kingsbury, is like a larger wide receiver stable that rotates more.
Well, at the moment, I don't think we've got many outside of Christian Kirk.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be one of the first things to aim for in the draft, is more wide receivers. If we've got a chance to pick up Antonio Brown, I'm sure that would be a good one to have as well. And then obviously we'll see probably in the next couple of weeks about whether we've got Larry Fitzgerald again.
Yeah, and of course, Chad Williams. I always forget about him, but I think everyone does.
Chad Williams is all right. He did okay this season.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't rave about it, to be fair.
Yeah, it's all right. Another coach coming in, obviously for an area that we struggled with enormously this year. We got a new O-line coach.
Yep, Sean Coogler. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I didn't find a pronunciation for it, so... Apologies if that's wrong.
Coogler's all right. I think that's fair.
Yeah, he was highly sought after. We fought off a number of teams to get him to sign in Arizona, including the East Coast Cardinals of Tampa Bay.
Oh, we'll get onto that in a minute, I'm sure. I think we need to cover that as a news item as well.
Nah, we'll cover it now.
Are we going to cover the treachery?
Judas.
Yeah, our dear departed head coach who left on such good terms, Bruce Arians, saying that he had to retire, you know, he was leaving, left us to Steve Wilks, and then, you know, a season later signed with Tampa Bay.
He said something about he doesn't like doing rebuilds, but, you know, yeah, we know that.
I mean, I heard that his health is a lot better now, and I hope at least that was part of the factor, you know, like, because I don't know if you remember, in his last season, he was in hospital a couple of times, including sort of just before and after some games. So I'm hoping that at least part of the decision to come back was like his health getting a lot better.
He does realise he's working with Jameis Winston, though.
Ooh.
That's not good for the health.
He didn't like young quarterbacks either, particularly, did Bruce Arians.
No, but, you know, Jameis is young-ish, I suppose. He's only into his fifth year.
That's still young, right?
Yeah.
After he was eating a W the other year, I still think of him as a rookie.
They've had a lot of former Cardinal coaches in Tampa Bay, including Todd Bowles.
Yeah. Yeah, I had thought there was a good solid chance he might end up coming back to be the defensive coordinator here. And, you know, I think it's probably for the best that he didn't, despite the fact he had a good solid tenure. I don't know if it would have been just too familiar, you know, whereas we've got somebody coming in who's got brand new eyes, as it were.
I'd have had him back, without a doubt.
I would have definitely had him back as well if we could have had him. But, you know, the fact that we've not, if we're talking every cloud has a silver lining and all that.
I think it's just the Bruce Arians came out of retirement, you know, jobs for the boys, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
It's not what you know, it's who you know.
It is who you know, absolutely.
We do have another staff announcement, and that's linebackers coach Bill Davis. He was most recently with Ohio State, but he was on the Cardinals staff from 2007 to 2011 in the Super Bowl run.
What sort of staff did he was he on is the question. Was he as linebackers coach, or was he in some other position?
I think he was linebackers coach, and then he also had his stint as defensive coordinator. I think that was his last year.
Okay.
And then he got fired.
Whoops. Well, you know, I think it's that's good. You know, got somebody with a bit of Cardinals pedigree coming in. Yeah, linebackers, especially now that we're moving back to 3-4, rather, you know, linebackers will be even more prevalent than usual because we'll get fewer defensive ends and more linebackers.
We also did hire a couple more staff members. I don't think they're worth mentioning.
Yeah, these are that's really the big coaching staff. I'm just going to check and make sure we've not hired an offensive coordinator while we've been talking. Nope. So I guess that means we can move on to the main event, right?
Well, we could, but we've got to announce that special teams coach is back for another season, Jeff Rogers.
That's true. Special teams was one of the best elements of the Cardinals this year.
It brought off British Bird Gang Awards as well, but, you know, we'll get on to them.
Well, we will get on to the British Bird Gang Awards, absolutely.
Like right now, because why not?
Like right now, absolutely. And I think we'll go, shall we go in the order that the questions came up in?
Yep. So before we get started, obviously, thanks to the 200 plus responses we had this year. It's clearly the most we've had ever.
Pretty solid, guys. I'm dead impressed. Yeah, it's really gratifying to see so many people, you know, coming in and responding to things like that as well.
And obviously everyone enjoys the Goat of the Season award, which is where we'll kick off this awards results breakdown thing.
So just remember that the British Bird Gang Goat of the Season is always different from normal goats, because we mean goat in the British sense of, you know, total loss of the season, the worst of the season.
Yeah, maybe we should rename it like the Woat or something like that.
No, I think it's tradition now. It's been how many years? So we had a clear winner in this category.
Yep, with nearly half of the votes, they went to Sam Bradford.
Yep.
Everyone got votes in this one, though.
Yeah, all of the nominees. So the other nominees were Jermaine Gresham, who was kind of in our second place. Oh, no, sorry. Robert Condici was definitely in second place there. Jermaine Gresham in third. JJ Nelson in fourth. And Brandon Williams even got a few votes as well.
That poor guy.
I think, you know, this is a fair one to give to Sam Bradford, because it was a questionable decision, I think. You know, a lot of people were kind of questioning it at the time and thinking, you know, like, the guy's always injured, et cetera, et cetera. But he really came in and just didn't have any upside to him for the three games that he started.
Yeah, and then he got paid handsomely for it as well, which I'm sure counted against him.
Yeah, he did get paid pretty well for doing very, very little work. He was still our quarterback, I think, in the you know, 10 yards of offense in the Rams half game when we got grannied by them.
Yeah, that was week two, wasn't it?
Week two or three.
No, because week three was benched for Josh Rosen.
Okay, so yeah, it must have been week two of them.
We'd rather not remember any of the games, to be fair.
Let's consign Sam Bradford's stint at the Cardinals to the bins of history by giving him the Goat of the Season award with nearly half of the votes.
I'm sure he'd be well impressed with that.
Absolutely. And next on to it is, you know, similar to the Goat of the Year, but it's more the disappointment of the year.
Yep. The disappointment of the year was pretty close, to be fair, considering there was like seven different options. The option that won was finishing 3-13 with 19.3% of the vote.
I think that's quite a good one to win as well, because it sort of encapsulates the rest of them. You know, finishing 3-13 is quite a neat way of saying, like, what a disappointing season.
You could literally say all of them were disappointment.
They were. I mean, so all of the categories got votes, as you said, and most of them were nearly identical, but Steve Wilkes came in a close second. Probably after that would be the offense being worst in the league, followed by Mike McCoy, Sam Bradford, Steve Keim, and the defense being worst in the league.
Yeah, I think defense finished third with 15.6%.
Yeah.
And the offense was 15.1%. So that was a close one between those two.
Definitely, yeah.
Got to be disappointed with that and as a whole, though, really, especially the defense.
The least disappointing one of all the disappointments is Steve Keim, which I think is fair because he, you know, he sort of did all right. He helped us at least draft Josh Rosen. That's still part of this year, I guess.
I mean, you can give him some credit, but I mean, people will hate me saying that because everyone hates Steve Keim.
Everyone hates on Keim. I'm not that down on Steve Keim, but I do understand why people are voting on him there.
Our next award was for Game of the Year, and with it being such a bad season, there was only four nominations.
Yeah, in fact, one of them, which came in second place, was a loss because we only had three wins. So the nominations were Cardinals beating the 49ers 28-14, Cardinals beating the Packers 20-17, Cardinals beating the 49ers again 18-15, and Cardinals losing to the Seahawks 24-27. In first place was the Cardinals-Packers game because it's probably the only time that we played like an NFL team all season.
And even then, I wasn't convinced.
No, it wasn't the most. It was the week that gave us enough hope to think that we were going to win the week after against the Lions. Do you remember that? When we're like, oh, we can beat the Packers, but surely we can have a chance at beating the Lions. No, it didn't happen.
Just shit, basically, all season.
Yeah. What was really interesting, though, is that the loss to the Seahawks got nearly a quarter of the vote, you know, coming in second place.
Which is the only game we actually showed fight in, though, so I can see why.
Definitely. I think it was probably one of the best ones to watch, you know, and it was like the Seahawks were at least a good opponent that we came close against, whereas the Packers were, you know, just as bad as us in a lot of respects last season.
The next award we voted on was Play of the Year, and there's a very clear winner in this one.
The clearest of all the winners, yeah. The winner obviously being the Larry Fitzgerald passing touchdown to David Johnston, because how could you beat that?
Well, no, that received 78.8% of the vote.
I think that would have won in any other season, to be honest with you, as well.
Exactly, if you put it against all the previous Play of the Year winners, which I might do, actually. That sounds like an interesting thing.
That's an interesting poll to have, yeah.
Yeah, to see if it would actually beat them.
I think it would win. The very, like, maybe just because it's fresh in people's minds, but it was like, you know, it's a Cardinals legend passing to another Cardinals legend and doing something that, you know, we all know he's actually really wanted to do for years.
Exactly. It's not like if you look at the other nominations, none of them really stand out, do they?
Yeah, exactly.
They were just there because, like, we didn't have that many to choose from.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the other nominations being Dennis Gardeck blocked punt touchdown return, which was in the final game, right?
It was, yes.
Which received hardly any votes, but it was an exciting play. It's probably most I've cheered all season other than the Fitz touchdown. The Rosen to Fitzgerald TD in week 8 against San Francisco, and the Rosen to Kirk TD in San Francisco in week 5, which are both difficult to recall, you know, because they were kind of just touchdowns at that point, really. The sort of thing that a normal NFL team should be scoring all the time.
Exactly. As I say, it was slim pickings. It was either, it could have been like a two-horse race, and Fitz would have won it easily.
Yeah. No, I think it's a very easy one to call right there, and a very well-deserved Play of the Year. As I said, obviously there wasn't much else to cheer for, but I think this would have definitely won in a lot of people's kind of top all-time lists.
Moving on to the next award, and that's Veteran Player of the Year. And this was a bit of a two-horse race, though one did come out on top, quite a significant margin.
Well, the nominations were for Larry Fitzgerald, Andy Lee, Antoine Bethea, John Phillips, Corey Peters, and Jermaine Gresham. And John Phillips and Jermaine Gresham didn't get any votes at all, which is hardly surprising. Corey Peters and Antoine Bethea both got a handful of votes each, but Larry Fitzgerald ran away with it with just under 2/3 of the vote.
Yeah, we finished with 62.3% of the vote compared to Andy Lee's 31.1% of the vote.
You're always going to struggle to beat Larry Fitzgerald, but really this year, again, we talk about, you know, people talk about him having class all the time, and we talk about how much of a great guy he is. He really took this season in his stride, considering how horrible it was for everyone.
I'm just disappointed Andy Lee didn't win.
Yeah, it's a shame, but, you know, what can you do? He won a lot of our player of the game awards throughout the year. More than Fitz, anyway.
I'm sure he might win some more later on, but, you know, spoilers.
Well, should we talk about the Rookie of the Year first?
Yeah, Rookie of the Year was the next one. And with 69.3% of the vote, Christian Kirk ran away with this one.
And that's quite surprising, honestly, to me, because I had seen this one and I thought that Josh Rosen was a shoo-in just by virtue of kind of being the quarterback and being a player that everyone's excited about. But actually, he even came in third with only 12.3% of the vote, came in even behind Mason Cole.
Well, I mean, he's always behind Mason Cole, as it is anyway.
That's a... It's a good solid joke right there.
I know, I wasted you.
Christian Kirk has run away with it, considering especially, you know, even the time that he spent injured as well.
Says a lot for the rookie class, though, I suppose.
Well, do you know, I think we had quite a good rookie class. I mean, everyone actually got votes here as well. Corey Cunningham, Trent Sherfield, who had a few good games towards the end, Zeke Turner and Dennis Gardeck all got votes in there as well.
I'm not sure if Gardeck did. If he did, it's really, really small.
If he did, it might have been one. But, you know, I think it's a promising overall rookie class, but really, if you look at it from another team's perspective, would any other team's fans have heard of these guys? Maybe Christian Kirk and probably Josh Rosen by virtue of him being a quarterback. But yeah, Christian Kirk is really this kind of standout of those guys.
The next award was Breakout Player of the Year.
Breakout Player of the Year is a bit confusing, but it's got a nice even split between a lot of them as well.
Yep, all five received a fair few nominations. Well, votes were up.
The votes were all between Chad Williams, Zane Gonzalez, Ricky Seals-Jones, Hassan Reddick, and Rodney Gunter. But Hassan Reddick managed to win with 30.7% of the vote.
Yeah, I mean, you can't complain about that, even though we still don't know what his position is in this defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when we're talking about breakout player, obviously that can be read a few different ways, but really I think it's like, you know, who has been quiet until now and has had a chance to kind of shine. And I've definitely heard Hassan Reddick's name in a positive light more often this year than previous years. And at least he was healthy for, you know, most of it.
Even Zane Gonzalez got a fair few votes, and he was only here for like a couple of weeks, if that.
Yeah, but I guess his was kind of a redemption arc as well, was Zane Gonzalez after he'd been kicked out from the Browns for, you know, having a string of missed field goals. He came here and, of course, yeah, he had a few missed field goals here and there, but overall he was a lot more reliable.
Moving on to our special teams player of the year, and finally justice for Andy Lee.
Yep, Andy Lee away with this one with the highest percentage of any vote, taking an 83% overall, beating out Phil Dawson, Zane Gonzalez, Zeke Turner, and Dennis Gardeck.
83% of the vote, mad.
It's pretty solid, right? You know, it's a good solid win right there, I would say, for Andy Lee. And my God, does he deserve it? Because I've said it before, I'll say it again. We're not joking when we're giving him the player of the game award, you know. It's not, obviously we would rather give it to an offensive or defensive player, but he has been playing spectacularly all season. He's been kicking really well. He's had really high punt averages. I think he broke a record in the last game, and he's been, you know, sort of pinpoint accuracy. I'm really hoping that we manage to hold on to him this year.
Well, he's still under contract, so, you know, hopefully be back to retain his title for next season.
Just fight for it again for special teams player.
Although I'd rather he wasn't used as much next season.
Yeah, that would be good if he had fewer punts to show us what he's made of. But maybe, you know, have fewer punts but make them more accurate. That would be good.
Moving on to our next award is the offensive player of the year.
Can you feel it ramping up, you know, offensive player of the year? This is getting into the big guns. And we were, for this one, between Josh Rosen, David Johnston, Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, and Mason Cole. And surprising to me, at least, Josh Rosen came in last.
People just don't rate Josh Rosen this season.
I mean, Cardinals fans have still been going mad for him, though, is the thing. You know, even when he's not had that great a game, they've been, you know, out to defend him.
Yeah, we finished last place, Mason Cole just ahead of him, then David Johnson in third with 9.9%. Second place went to Christian Kirk with 32.5%, but the winner again was Larry Fitzgerald with 48.1%.
I would have quite liked to see Christian Kirk win this one, to be honest with you, just, you know, because he's the young guy, you know, coming in and making a difference. But I do get why Fitz won. You know, he's a fan favorite and all that. But to me, just, you know, he didn't do as much this year as he had in the past. There were some games when, you know, we were waiting an entire half to see him get his catch to continue his streak of games with a catch, you know.
How many touchdown passes did Christian Kirk throw this season?
Point taken.
That's what it has to be, Larry Fitzgerald.
I think David Johnson would be higher up as well if it wasn't for his half a season on the McCoy offense, which, by the way, did you see the Rams running a play called Cardinal Cardinal?
Which went just straight up the middle.
It was straight up the middle, yeah.
The disrespect. But I mean, we deserve that.
We do deserve that. It was absolutely what was happening. So I'm, you know, happy to take that ribbing, actually.
We'll have to get him back next year.
Now with a player that I definitely, he was my vote for, coming away with Defensive Player of the Year.
Yep, our penultimate award.
Penultimate award, and Chandler Jones coming in there with 2/3 of the vote to really seal that deal. Just behind him being Patrick Peterson and then Buda Baker.
Yeah, well, you say just behind, but he was like a good 40% of the vote behind.
Yeah, Patrick Peterson in with just under 20, and then with certain marginal amounts of votes, we get Corey Peters and Antoine Bethea.
Yeah, but obviously Chandler Jones takes this with 59.9% of the vote.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was probably our only sort of nationally relevant defensive player. The only one that would have been getting talked about on shows and stuff like that, other than when Patrick Peterson had his little bit of drama during the season as well.
I don't think Chandler Jones made any of the All-Pro teams, though. Just overlooked, as always.
I mean, that's happened for years to him as well. And the problem is that it's numbers. You know, like, numbers don't lie. And sure, he had a while where he was, you know, doing okay in terms of the numbers of sacks that he was putting up. But you just can't rely on that forever. You got to have, like, overall defensive numbers to make that jump.
And plus, this year was a bit of a down year from him, I'd say.
Oh, definitely down compared to last year, but it was a huge key part of the defense. And, you know, we talked about it for pretty much every week, but the defense was really doing well for, you know, two or three quarters sometimes during the game, and then it would just crash because the offense wasn't giving them the time off the field to relax.
Could blame Steve Wilkes for that as well, I suppose, with him having less sacks this year.
Yeah, he was supposed to be a defensive mind with Steve Wilkes, and he came in and couldn't even, you know, help Chandler Jones get to the Pro Bowl.
Shocking.
None of that.
However, we're now on to our final award of the evening, and that's the British Bird Gang 2018 MVP. The biggest of big ones.
The biggest of big ones. So my question to you, Tom, who did worst in this poll?
Of the six players that were nominated, David Johnson finished sixth. Josh Rosen was fifth. I think both of them were like under like 2% of the vote, maybe, between them.
Yeah, which is like four people each at that point, you know. David Johnson, I don't think we can give him an MVP award for sure. And Josh Rosen as well. Patrick Peterson still got a few votes, which I was quite surprised about.
Yeah, he finished fourth with 11.3%. In third place was Chandler Jones with 21.2%.
Makes sense, our defensive MVP.
But the biggest shock here was Larry Fitzgerald finished second with 31.1% of the vote.
Hang on a minute, that means that there's only just over 31% of the vote left, right?
Yep, so with 31.6% of the vote, hashtag Andy Lee for MVP won.
Andy Lee, British Bird Gang 2018 MVP. He did it, and I'm so happy. He did it by half a percentage point as well, which makes me even happier.
Literally one vote between the two of them.
One vote between the two. In fact, they were tied for quite a while, weren't they, in the run-up to when we were recording.
Yeah, but then as soon as Andy Lee took the lead, a closer voting.
Oh, man.
Nothing dodgy about that.
What a way to round out our 2018 season. We talked about it possibly happening throughout the whole season. We thought it had a possibility, but I never dared to dream that we would give our punter the MVP award for the full season.
It just goes to show how bad of a season it was, technically.
It really does. I mean, it was a dreadful season, and I'm glad it's behind us. I'm glad we can put it in the bin now. And, you know, obviously at this point it's all about looking forward and what have you, but the fact that this award went to Andy Lee 1 year is, you know, that'll be a big indication of how bad this season really was.
But now it's etched into history.
Is Andy Lee on Twitter? Can we tweet him that he won our...
He is on Twitter, yes. And I will be definitely tweeting him to let him know.
Good. The real question is, does he follow us on Twitter?
He doesn't know, but, you know, no players do.
He might do now. Let's find out.
I mean, we gave him the biggest award we can actually give it someone.
Yeah, and as I said before, I'm going to do it sincerely. I'm absolutely going to do it sincerely and say, you know, I think that he had an excellent season and I'm very, very happy with it.
I think I should probably tweet all the winners once the episode's actually out. You know, send them the episode, get them to retweet it, get us some more listeners.
Who knows? Might happen. Defensive MVP getting us tweeted out. We should maybe tweet it to Cliff Kingsbury as well. Send them a British Bird Gang hat or something like that.
We're not made of money.
Maybe we can have a whip round.
I mean, we've not even got a trophy for our MVP. We can't do that yet.
Okay.
We'll do a certificate instead.
Yeah, a certificate's a good one. We can just draw it in crayon or something like that.
I mean, that's a kind of professional. Paint will do.
Poster paints, yeah. I'll get down the pound shop tomorrow.
Or paint on Microsoft Paint. Sort of thing.
Okay.
You're on a Mac.
I am on a Mac today. That's I'm not in British Bird Gang Towers. I'm in the office. But oh well. Well, I guess that's us for the 2018 season.
Thank God for that.
Should we talk quickly about our plans for podcasting the off season?
We'll just send the podcast out whenever we can be bothered, really.
I think we were saying we're going to try once a month, roughly, based on what news there is and things like that, so that we didn't have to, we didn't have to try and contrive things to come up with and talk about, and would actually have things that happened within the space of a month during the off season.
Yep, so this obviously counts as our January episode, I suppose.
I guess it would in that case, but I'm going to count it as a nice bookend to the end of 2018, and a nice way to say, thank God that's all over.
Yes, on to 2019.
On to 2019, and let's hope it's significantly better.
As always, thanks for listening. If you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bird Gang and Bird Gang Club UK. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/British Bird Gang and join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Bird Gang. Buy British Bird Gang t-shirts at britishbirdgang.tmail.com.
I think that's us. We're done for the season. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Don't forget to rate us on Google Play or Pocket Casts or wherever the hell it is that you get your podcasts.
Or Spotify.
Or Spotify, yeah. I guess we're on Spotify now as well.
Yeah, we're hip.
As always, we only accept 5-star reviews. So as long as you're giving out a 5-star review, we want to hear from you.
Yeah, don't tell anyone about our lack of knowledge, that sort of thing. Terrible takes. We don't need them to know. They can find that when they listen.
Awful, awful jokes.
But yes, that'll do it for episode 69 of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. So, as always, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Thank you and goodbye to 2018.
Thank fuck it's over.
Roll credits.
Which is what you'll be saying when you've listened to the podcast.
Oh, dear.